4. I didn't have anything special to do, so I went down to the can and chewed the rag with him while he was shaving. We were the only ones in the can because everybody was still down at the game. It was hot as hell and the windows were all steamy. There were about 10 washbowls all right against the wall. Stradlater had the middle one. I sat down on the one right next to him and started turning the cold water on and off, this nervous habit I have. Stradlater kept whistling Song of India while he shaved. He had one of those very piercing whistles that are practically never in tune, and he always picked out some song that's hard to whistle even if you're a good whistler, like Song of India or Slaughter on 10th Avenue. He could really mess a song up. You remember I said before that Ackley was a slob in his personal habits? Well, so was Stradlater, but in a different way. Stradlater was more of a secret slob. He always looked all right, Stradlater, but, for instance, you should have seen the razor he shaved himself with. It was always rusty as hell and full of lather and hairs and crap. He never cleaned it or anything. He always looked good when he was finished fixing himself up, but he was a secret slob anyway, if you knew him the way I did. The reason he fixed himself up to look good was because he was madly in love with himself. He thought he was the handsomest guy in the Western Hemisphere. He was pretty handsome, too, I'll admit it. But he was mostly the kind of a handsome guy that if your parents saw his picture in your yearbook, they'd right away say, "Who's this boy?" I mean, he was mostly a yearbook kind of handsome guy. I knew a lot of guys at Pensy I thought were a lot handsomer than Stradlater, but they wouldn't look handsome if you saw their pictures in the yearbook. They'd look like they had big noses or their ears stuck out. I've had that experience frequently. Anyway, I was sitting on the washbowl next to where Stradlater was shaving, sort of turning the water on and off. I still had my red hunting hat on with the peak around to the back and all. I really got a bang out of that hat. "Hey," Stradlater said, "want to do me a big favor?" "What?" I said, not too enthusiastic. He was always asking you to do him a big favor. You take a very handsome guy, or a guy that thinks he's a real hotshot, and they're always asking you to do them a big favor. Just because they're crazy about themselves, they think you're crazy about them, too, and that you're just dying to do them a favor. It's sort of funny, in a way. "You going out tonight?" he said. I might not, I don't know, why?" "I got about 100 pages to read for history for Monday," he said. "How about writing a composition for me, for English? I'll be up the creek if I don't get the goddamn thing in by Monday, the reason I ask. How about it?" It was very ironical. It really was. "I'm the one that's flunking out of the goddamn place, and you're asking me to write you a goddamn composition," I said. "Yeah, I know. The thing is, though, I'll be up the creek if I don't get it in. Be a buddy. Be a buddy-roo, okay?" I didn't answer him right away. Suspense is good for some bastards like Stradlater. "What on?" I said.
"Anything. Anything descriptive. A room or a house or something you once lived in or something. You know, just as long as it's descriptive as hell."
He gave out a big yawn while he said that, which is something that gives me a royal pain in the ass. I mean, if somebody yawns right while they're asking you to do them a goddamn favor.
"Just don't do it too good is all," he said.
"That son of a bitch Hartzell thinks you're a hot shot in English, and he knows you're my roommate. So, I mean, don't stick all the commas and stuff in the right place." That's something else that gives me a royal pain. I mean, if you're good at writing compositions and somebody starts talking about commas, Stradlater was always doing that. He wanted you to think that the only reason he was lousy at writing compositions was because he stuck all the commas in the wrong place. He was a little bit like Ackley that way. I once sat next to Ackley at this basketball game. We had a terrific guy on the team, Howie Coyle, that could sink them from the middle of the floor without even touching the backboard or anything. Ackley kept saying the whole goddamn game that Coyle had a perfect build for basketball. God, how I hate that stuff. I got bored sitting on that washbowl after a while, so I backed up a few feet and started doing this tap dance, just for the hell of it. I was just amusing myself. I can't really tap dance or anything, but it was a stone floor in the can, and it was good for tap dancing. I started imitating one of those guys in the movies, in one of those musicals. I hate the movies like poison, but I get a bang imitating them. Old Strad later watched me in the mirror while he was shaving. All I need's an audience. I'm an exhibitionist. I'm the goddamn governor's son, I said. I was knocking myself out, tap dancing all over the place. He doesn't want me to be a tap dancer. He wants me to go to Oxford, but it's in my goddamn blood. Tap dancing! Old Strad later laughed. He didn't have too bad a sense of humor. It's the opening night of the Ziegfeld Follies! I was getting out of breath. I have hardly any wind at all. The leading man can't go on. He's drunk as a bastard. So who do they get to take his place? Me, that's who. The little old goddamn governor's son. Where'd you get that hat? Stradlater said. He meant my hunting hat. He'd never seen it before. I was out of breath anyway, so I quit horsing around. I took off my hat and looked at it for about the 90th time. I got it in New York this morning, for a buck. You like it? Stradlater nodded. Sharp, he said. He was only flattering me, though, because right away he said, listen, are you going to write that composition for me? I have to know. If I get the time, I will. If I don't, I won't, I said. I went over and sat down on the washbowl next to him again. Who's your date? I asked him. Fitzgerald. Hell no. I told you, I'm through with that pig. Yeah? Give her to me, boy. No kidding. She's my type. Take her. She's too old for you. All of a sudden, for no good reason, really, except that I was sort of in the mood for horsing around, I felt like jumping off the washbowl and getting old Stradlater in a half Nelson. That's a wrestling hold, in case you don't know, where you get the other guy around the neck and choke him to death if you feel like it. So, I did it. I landed on him like a goddamn panther. Cut it out, Holden, for Christ's sake, Stradlater said. He didn't feel like horsing around. He was shaving and all. What do you want to make me do, cut my goddamn head off? I didn't let go, though. I had a pretty good half Nelson on him. Liberate yourself from my vice-like grip, I said. Jesus Christ! He put down his razor, and all of a sudden jerked his arms up and sort of broke my hold on him. He was a very strong guy, and I'm a very weak guy. Now cut out the crap, he said. He started shaving himself all over again. He always shaved himself twice to look gorgeous, with his crummy old razor. Who is your date if it isn't Fitzgerald? I asked him. I sat down on the washbowl next to him again. That Phyllis Smith, babe? No, it was supposed to be, but the arrangements got all screwed up. I got Bud Thaw's girl's roommate now. Hey, I almost forgot. She knows you. Who does? I said. My date. Yeah? I said. What's her name? I was pretty interested. Thinking. Jean Gallagher. Boy, I nearly dropped dead when he said that. Jane Gallagher, I said. I even got up from the washbowl when he said that. I damn near dropped dead. You're damn right I know her. She practically lived right next door to me the summer before last. She had this big damn Doberman pincher. That's how I met her. Her dog used to keep coming over and... You're right in my light, Holden, for Christ's sake, Stradlater said. You have to stand right there. Boy, was I excited, though. I really was. Where is she? I asked him. I ought to go down and say hello to her or something. Where is she? In the annex? Yeah. How'd she happen to mention me? Does she go to BM now? She said she might go there. She said she might go to Shipley, too. I thought she went to Shipley. How'd she happen to mention me? I was pretty excited. I really was. I don't know, for Christ's sake. Lift up, will you? You're on my towel, Stradlater said. I was sitting on a stupid towel. Jane Gallagher, I said. I couldn't get over it. Jesus H. Christ. Old Stradlater was putting Vitalis on his hair. My Vitalis.
She's a dancer, I said. Ballet and all. She used to practice about 2 hours every day, right in the middle of the hottest weather and all. She was worried that it might make her legs lousy, all thick and all. I used to play checkers with her all the time.
You used to play what with her all the time?
Checkers.
Checkers, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, she wouldn't move any of her kings. But she'd do, when she'd get a king, she wouldn't move it. She'd just leave it in the back row. She'd get them all lined up in the back row, then she'd never use them. She just liked the way they looked when they were all in the back row.
Stridlater didn't say anything. That kind of stuff doesn't interest most people.
Her mother belonged to the same club we did, I said. I used to caddy once in a while just to make some dough. I caddied for her mother a couple of times. She went around in about 170 for 9 holes.
Stradlater wasn't hardly listening. He was combing his gorgeous locks.
I ought to go down and at least say hello to her, I said.
Why don't you?
I will, in a minute. He started parting his hair all over again. It took him about an hour to comb his hair. Her mother and father were divorced. Her mother was married again to some booze hound, I said. Skinny guy with hairy legs. I remember him. He wore shorts all the time. Jane said he was supposed to be a playwright or some goddamn thing, but all I ever saw him do was booze all the time and listen to every single goddamn mystery program on the radio, and run around the goddamn house naked, with Jane around and all.
Yeah? Stradlater said. That really interested him.
About the booze hound running around the house naked with Jane around. Stradlater was a very sexy bastard. She had a lousy childhood, I'm not kidding. That didn't interest Stradlater, though. Only very sexy stuff interested him.
Jane Gallagher? Jesus.
I couldn't get her off my mind. I really couldn't. I ought to go down and say hello to her, at least.
Why the hell don't you, instead of keep saying it? Stradlater said.
I walked over to the window, but you couldn't see out of it. It was so steamy from all the heat in the can. I'm not in the mood right now, I said. I wasn't either. You have to be in the mood for those things. I thought she went to Shipley. I could have sworn she went to Shipley. I walked around the can for a little while. I didn't have anything else to do. Did she enjoy the game? I said.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know.
Did she tell you we used to play checkers all the time or anything?
I don't know. For Christ's sake, I only just met her, Stradlater said.
He was finished combing his goddamn gorgeous hair. He was putting away all his crummy toilet articles. Listen, give her my regards, will you?
Okay, Stradlater said.
But I knew he probably wouldn't. You take a guy like Stradlater, they never give you regards to people. He went back to the room, but I stuck around in the can for a while, thinking about old Jane. Then I went back to the room, too. Stradlater was putting on his tie in front of the mirror when I got there. He spent around half his goddamn life in front of the mirror. I sat down in my chair and sort of watched him for a while. Hey, I said, don't tell her I got kicked out, will you?
Okay.
That was one good thing about Stradlater. You didn't have to explain every goddamn little thing with him the way you had to do with Ackley. Mostly, I guess, because it wasn't too interested. That's really why. Ackley, it was different. Ackley was a very nosy bastard. He put on my houndstooth jacket. Jesus, now try not to stretch it all over the place, I said. I'd only worn it about twice.
I won't. Where the hell's my cigarettes?
On the desk. He never knew where he left anything.
Under your muffler.
He put them in his coat pocket. My coat pocket. I pulled the peak of my hunting hat around to the front all of a sudden, for a change. I was getting sort of nervous all of a sudden. I'm quite a nervous guy. Listen, where are you going on your date with her? I asked him. You know yet?
I don't know. New York, if we have time. She only signed out for 9:30, for Christ's sake.
I didn't like the way he said it. So I said, the reason she did that, she probably just didn't know what a handsome, charming bastard you are. If she'd known, she probably would have signed out for 9:30 in the morning.
Goddamn right, Stradlater said.
You couldn't rile him too easily. He was too conceited.
No kidding now. Do that composition for me, he said. He had his coat on, and he was all ready to go. Don't knock yourself out or anything, but just make it descriptive as hell, okay? I didn't answer him. I didn't feel like it. All I said was, ask her if she still keeps all her kings in the back row. Okay, Stradlater said, but I knew he wouldn't. Take it easy now. He banged the hell out of the room. I sat there for about a half hour after he left. I mean, I just sat in my chair, not doing anything. I kept thinking about Jane, and about Stradlater having a date with her and all. It made me so nervous I nearly went crazy. I already told you what a sexy bastard Stradlater was. All of a sudden, Ackley barged back in again through the damn shower curtains, as usual. For once in my stupid life, I was really glad to see him. He took my mind off the other stuff. He stuck around till around dinner time, talking about all the guys at Pensy that he hated their guts and squeezing this big pimple on his chin. He didn't even use his handkerchief. I don't even think the bastard had a handkerchief, if you want to know the truth. I never saw him use one, anyway. 5. We always had the same meal on Saturday nights at Pensy. It was supposed to be a big deal, because they gave you steak. I'll bet $1,000 the reason they did that was because a lot of guys' parents came up to school on Sunday, and old Thurmer probably figured everybody's mother would ask their darling boy what he had for dinner last night, and he'd say steak. What a racket. You should have seen the steaks. They were these little hard, dry jobs that you could hardly even cut. You always got these very lumpy mashed potatoes on steak night, and for dessert, you got Brown Betty, which nobody ate, except maybe the little kids in the lower school that didn't know any better, and guys like Ackley that ate everything. It was nice, though, when we got out of the dining room. There were about 3 inches of snow on the ground, and it was still coming down like a madman. It looked pretty as hell, and we all started throwing snowballs and horsing around all over the place. It was very childish, but everybody was really enjoying themselves. I didn't have a date or anything, so I and this friend of mine, Mal Brossard, that was on the wrestling team, decided we'd take a bus into Agerstown and have a hamburger and maybe see a lousy movie. Neither of us felt like sitting around on our ass all night. I asked Mal if he minded if Ackley came along with us. The reason I asked was because Ackley never did anything on Saturday night except stay in his room and squeeze his pimples or something. Mal said he didn't mind, but that he wasn't too crazy about the idea. He didn't like Ackley much. Anyway, we both went to our rooms to get ready and all, and while I was putting on my galoshes and crap, I yelled over and asked old Ackley if he wanted to go to the movies. He could hear me all right through the shower curtains, but he didn't answer me right away. He was the kind of a guy that hates to answer you right away. Finally, he came over through the goddamn curtains and stood on the shower ledge and asked who was going besides me. He always had to know who was going. I swear, if that guy was shipwrecked somewhere and you rescued him in a goddamn boat, he'd want to know who the guy was that was rowing it before he'd even get in. I told him Mal Brossard was going. He said, "That bastard. All right, wait a second. You think he was doing you a big favor?" It took him about 5 hours to get ready. While he was doing it, I went over to my window and opened it and packed a snowball with my bare hands. The snow was very good for packing. I didn't throw it at anything, though. I started to throw it at a car that was parked across the street. But I changed my mind. The car looked so nice and white. Then I started to throw it at a hydrant, but that looked too nice and white, too. Finally, I didn't throw it at anything. All I did was close the window and walk around the room with the snowball, packing it harder. A little while later, I still had it with me when I and Brossard and Ackley got on the bus. The bus driver opened the doors and made me throw it out. I told him I wasn't going to chuck it at anybody, but he wouldn't believe me. People never believe you. Brossard and Ackley both had seen the picture that was playing, so all we did, we just had a couple of hamburgers and played the pinball machine for a little while, then took the bus back to Pensy. I didn't care about not seeing the movie anyway. It was supposed to be a comedy with Cary Grant in it and all that crap. Besides, I'd been to the movies with Brossard and Ackley before. They both laughed like hyenas at stuff that wasn't even funny. I didn't even enjoy sitting next to them in the movies. It was only about 9:15 when we got back to the dorm. Old Brossard was a bridge fiend, and he started looking around the dorm for a game. Old Ackley parked himself in my room just for a change. Only instead of sitting on the arm of Stradlater's chair, he laid down on my bed, with his face right on my pillow and all. He started talking in this very monotonous voice and picking at all his pimples. I dropped about 1,000 hints, but I couldn't get rid of him. All he did was keep talking in this very monotonous voice about some babe he was supposed to have had sexual intercourse with the summer before. He'd already told me about it about 100 times. Every time he told it, it was different. One minute, he'd be giving it to her in his cousin's Buick. The next minute, he'd be giving it to her under some boardwalk. It was all a lot of crap, naturally. He was a virgin if ever I saw one. I doubt if he ever even gave anybody a feel. Anyway, finally, I had to come right out and tell him that I had to write a composition for Stradlater, and that he had to clear the hell out so I could concentrate. He finally did, but he took his time about it, as usual. After he left, I put on my pajamas and bathrobe and my old hunting hat and started writing the composition. The thing was, I couldn't think of a room or a house or anything to describe the way Stradlater said he had to have. I'm not too crazy about describing rooms and houses anyway. So what I did, I wrote about my brother Allie's baseball mitt. It was a very descriptive subject. It really was. My brother Allie had this left-handed fielder's mitt. He was left-handed. The thing that was descriptive about it, though, was that he had poems written all over the fingers and the pocket and everywhere, in green ink. He wrote them on it so he'd have something to read when he was in the field and nobody was up at bat. He's dead now. He got leukemia and died when we were up in Maine, on July 18, 1946. You'd have liked him. He was 2 years younger than I was, but he was about 50 times as intelligent. He was terrifically intelligent. His teachers were always writing letters to my mother, telling her what a pleasure it was having a boy like Allie in their class. And they weren't just shooting the crap. They really meant it. But it wasn't just that he was the most intelligent member in the family. He was also the nicest, in lots of ways. He never got mad at anybody. People with red hair are supposed to get mad very easily, but Allie never did, and he had very red hair. I'll tell you what kind of red hair he had. I started playing golf when I was only 10 years old. I remember once, the summer I was around 12, teeing off and all, and having a hunch that if I turned around all of a sudden I'd see Allie. So I did, and sure enough, he was sitting on his bike outside the fence. There was this fence that went all around the course, and he was sitting there about 150 yards behind me, watching me tee off. That's the kind of red hair he had. God, he was a nice kid, though. He used to laugh so hard at something he thought of at the dinner table that he just about fell off his chair. I was only 13, and they were going to have me psychoanalyzed and all because I broke all the windows in the garage. I don't blame them. I really don't. I slept in the garage the night he died, and I broke all the goddamn windows with my fist, just for the hell of it. I even tried to break all the windows on the station wagon we had that summer. Thought my hand was already broken and everything by that time, and I couldn't do it. It was a very stupid thing to do, I'll admit, but I hardly didn't even know I was doing it. And you didn't know Allie. My hand still hurts me once in a while, when it rains and all. And I can't make a real fist anymore. Not a tight one, I mean. But outside of that, I don't care much. I mean, I'm not going to be a goddamn surgeon or a violinist or anything anyway. Anyway, that's what I wrote Stradlater's composition about, old Allie's baseball mitt. I happened to have it with me in my suitcase, so I got it out and copied down the poems that were written on it. All I had to do was change Allie's name so that nobody would know it was my brother and not Stradlater's. I wasn't too crazy about doing it, but I couldn't think of anything else descriptive. Besides, I sort of liked writing about it. It took me about an hour, because I had to use Stradlater's lousy typewriter, and it kept jamming on me. The reason I didn't use my own was because I'd lent it to a guy down the hall. It was around 10:30, I guess, when I finished it. I wasn't tired, though, so I looked out the window for a while. It wasn't snowing out anymore, but every once in a while you could hear a car somewhere not being able to get started. You could also hear old Ackley snoring. Right through the goddamn shower curtains, you could hear him. He had sinus trouble, and he couldn't breathe too hot when he was asleep. That guy had just about everything. Sinus trouble, pimples, lousy teeth, halitosis, crummy fingernails. You had to feel a little sorry for the crazy son of a bitch. 6. Some things are hard to remember. I'm thinking now of when Stradlater got back from his date with Jane. I mean, I can't remember exactly what I was doing when I heard his goddamn stupid footsteps coming down the corridor. I probably was still looking out the window, but I swear I can't remember. I'm so damn worried, that's why. When I really worry about something, I don't just fool around. I even have to go to the bathroom when I worry about something. Only I don't go. I'm too worried to go. I don't want to interrupt my worrying to go. If you knew Stradlater, you'd have been worried too. I double-dated with that bastard a couple of times, and I know what I'm talking about. He was unscrupulous. He really was. Anyway, the corridor was all linoleum and all, and you could hear his goddamn footsteps coming right towards the room. I don't even remember where I was sitting when he came in, at the window or in my chair or his. I swear, I can't remember. He came in griping about how cold it was out. Then he said, "Where the hell is everybody? It's like a goddamn morgue around here." I didn't even bother to answer him. If he was so goddamn stupid not to realize it was Saturday night and everybody was out or asleep or home for the weekend, I wasn't going to break my neck telling him. He started getting undressed. He didn't say one goddamn word about Jane. Not one. Neither did I. I just watched him. All he did was thank me for letting him wear my houndstooth. He hung it up on a hanger and put it in the closet. Then, when he was taking off his tie, he asked me if I'd written his goddamn composition for him. I told him it was over on his goddamn bed. He walked over and read it while he was unbuttoning his shirt. He stood there, reading it, and sort of stroking his bare chest and stomach with this very stupid expression on his face. He was always stroking his stomach or his chest. He was mad about himself. All of a sudden, he said, "For Christ's sake, Holden, this is about a goddamn baseball glove." "So what?" I said. Cold as hell. "What do you mean, so what? I told you it had to be about a goddamn room or a house or something." "You said it had to be descriptive. What the hell's the difference if it's about a baseball glove?" "God damn it!" He was sore as hell. He was really furious. "You always do everything back-asswards." He looked at me. "No wonder you're flunking the hell out of here," he said. "You don't do one damn thing the way you're supposed to. I mean it, not one damn thing." "All right, give it back to me then," I said. I went over and pulled it right out of his goddamn hand. Then I tore it up. "What the hell'd you do that for?" he said. I didn't even answer him. I just threw the pieces in the wastebasket. Then I lay down on my bed, and we both didn't say anything for a long time. He got all undressed, down to his shorts, and I lay on my bed and lit a cigarette. You weren't allowed to smoke in the dorm, but you could do it late at night when everybody was asleep or out and nobody could smell the smoke. Besides, I did it to annoy Stradlater. It drove him crazy when you broke any rules. He never smoked in the dorm. It was only me. He still didn't say one single solitary word about Jane. So finally I said, "You're back pretty goddamn late if she only signed out for 9:30. Did you make her be late signing in?" He was sitting on the edge of his bed, cutting his goddamn toenails when I asked him that. "Couple of minutes," he said. "Who the hell signs out for 9:30 on a Saturday night?" God, how I hated him. "Did you go to New York?" I said. "You're crazy? How the hell could we go to New York if she only signed out for 9:30? "That's tough." He looked up at me. "Listen," he said, "if you're going to smoke in the room, how about going down to the can and do it? You may be getting the hell out of here, but I have to stick around long enough to graduate." I ignored him. I really did. I went right on smoking like a madman. All I did was sort of turn over on my side and watched him cut his damn toenails. What a school. You were always watching somebody cut their damn toenails or squeeze their pimples or something. Did you give her my regards? I asked him.
Yeah. The hell he did, the bastard.
What'd she say? I said. Did you ask her if she still keeps all the kings in the back row?
No, I didn't ask her.
What the hell you think we did all night, play checkers, for Christ's sake? I didn't even answer him. God, how I hated him. If you didn't go to New York, where'd you go with her? I asked him after a little while. I could hardly keep my voice from shaking all over the place. Boy, was I getting nervous. I just had a feeling something had gone funny. He was finished cutting his damn toenails, so he got up from the bed in just his damn shorts and all and started getting very damn playful. He came over to my bed and started leaning over me and taking these playful-as-hell socks at my shoulder. "Cut it out," I said. "Where'd you go with her if you didn't go to New York?"
"Nowhere. We just sat in the goddamn car."
He gave me another one of those playful, stupid little socks on the shoulder.
"Cut it out," I said. "Whose car?" "Ed Bankey's."
Ed Bankey was the basketball coach at Pensy. Old Stradlater was one of his pets, because he was the center on the team, and Ed Bankey always let him borrow his car when he wanted it. It wasn't allowed for students to borrow faculty guys' cars, but all the athletic bastards stuck together. In every school I've gone to, all the athletic bastards stick together. Stradlater kept taking these shadow punches down at my shoulder. He had his toothbrush in his hand, and he put it in his mouth. "What'd you do?" I said. "Give her the time in Ed Bankey's goddamn car?" My voice was shaking something awful.
"What a thing to say. Want me to wash your mouth out with soap?"
"Did you?"
"That's a professional secret, buddy."
This next part I don't remember so hot. All I know is I got up from the bed like I was going down to the can or something, and then I tried to sock him with all my might right smack in the toothbrush, so it split his goddamn throat open. Only I missed. I didn't connect. All I did was sort of get him on the side of the head or something. It probably hurt him a little bit, but not as much as I wanted. It probably would have hurt him a lot, but I did it with my right hand, and I can't make a good fist with that hand, on account of that injury I told you about.
Anyway, the next thing I knew, I was on the goddamn floor, and he was sitting on my chest with his face all red. That is, he had his goddamn knees on my chest, and he weighed about a ton. He had hold of my wrists, too, so I couldn't take another sock at him. I'd have killed him. "What the hell's the matter with you?" he kept saying, and his stupid face kept getting redder and redder. "Get your lousy knees off my chest," I told him. I was almost bawling, I really was. "Go on, get off of me, you crummy bastard." He wouldn't do it, though. He kept holding onto my wrists, and I kept calling him a son of a bitch and all for around 10 hours. I can hardly even remember what all I said to him. I told him he thought he could give the time to anybody he felt like. I told him he didn't even care if a girl kept all her kings in the back row or not, and the reason he didn't care was because he was a goddamn stupid moron. He hated it when you called him a moron. All morons hate it when you call them a moron. "Shut up now, Holden," he said, with his big stupid red face. "Just shut up now. You don't even know if her first name is Jane or Jean, you goddamn moron. Now shut up, Holden. God damn it, I'm warning you," he said. I really had him going. "If you don't shut up, I'm going to slam you one. Get your dirty, stinking moron knees off my chest. If I let you up, will you keep your mouth shut?" I didn't even answer him. He said it over again. "Holden, if I let you up, will you keep your mouth shut?" "Yes." He got up off me, and I got up, too. My chest hurt like hell from his dirty knees. "You're a dirty, stupid son of a bitch of a moron," I told him. That got him really mad. He shook his big, stupid finger in my face. "Holden, goddammit, I'm warning you now, for the last time, if you don't keep your yap shut, I'm gonna—" "Why should I?" I said. I was practically yelling. That's just the trouble with all you morons. You never want to discuss anything. That's the way you can always tell a moron. They never want to discuss anything intelligent. Then he really let one go at me, and the next thing I knew, I was on the goddamn floor again. I don't remember if he knocked me out or not, but I don't think so. It's pretty hard to knock a guy out, except in the goddamn movies. But my nose was bleeding all over the place. When I looked up, old Stradlater was standing practically right on top of me. He had his goddamn toilet kit under his arm. "Why the hell don't you shut up when I tell you to?" he said. He sounded pretty nervous. He probably was scared he'd fractured my skull or something when I hit the floor. It's too bad I didn't. "You asked for it, goddammit," he said. Boy, did he look worried. I didn't even bother to get up. I just lay there on the floor for a while, and kept calling him a moron son of a bitch. I was so mad I was practically bawling. "Listen, go wash your face," Stradlater said. "You hear me?" I told him to go wash his own moron face, which was a pretty childish thing to say, but I was mad as hell. I told him to stop off on the way to the can and give Mrs. Schmidt the time. Mrs. Schmidt was the janitor's wife. She was around 65. I kept sitting there on the floor till I heard old Stradlater close the door and go down the corridor to the can. Then I got up. I couldn't find my goddamn hunting hat anywhere. Finally, I found it. It was under the bed. I put it on and turned the old peak around to the back, the way I liked it. And then I went over and took a look at my stupid face in the mirror. You never saw such gore in your life. I had blood all over my mouth and chin and even on my pajamas and bathrobe. It partly scared me, and it partly fascinated me. All that blood and all sort of made me look tough. I'd only been in about 2 fights in my life, and I lost both of them. I'm not too tough. I'm a pacifist, if you want to know the truth. I had a feeling old Ackley'd probably heard all the racket and was awake, so I went through the shower curtains into his room, just to see what the hell he was doing. I hardly ever went over to his room. It always had a funny stink in it, because he was so crummy in his personal habits. 7. A tiny bit of light came through the shower curtains and all from our room, and I could see him lying in bed. I knew damn well he was wide awake. "Ackley," I said, "you awake?" "Yeah." It was pretty dark, and I stepped on somebody's shoe on the floor and damn near fell on my head. Ackley sort of sat up in bed and leaned on his arm. He had a lot of white stuff on his face, for his pimples. He looked sort of spooky in the dark. "What the hell are you doing, anyway?" I said. "What do you mean, what the hell am I doing? I was trying to sleep before you guys started making all that noise. What the hell was the fight about, anyhow?" "Where's the light?" I couldn't find the light. I was sliding my hand all over the wall. "What do you want the light for? Right next to your hand." I finally found the switch and turned it on. Old Ackley put his hand up so that the light wouldn't hurt his eyes. "Jesus," he said. "What the hell happened to you?" He meant all the blood and all. "I had a little goddamn tiff with Stradlater," I said. Then I sat down on the floor. They never had any chairs in their room. I don't know what the hell they did with their chairs. "Listen," I said, "do you feel like playing a little canasta?" He was a canasta fiend. "You're still bleeding, for Christ's sake. You better put something on it." "It'll stop. Listen, you want to play a little canasta, or don't you?" "Canasta, for Christ's sake. Do you know what time it is, by any chance?" "It isn't late. It's only around 11:30.
"Only around," Ackley said. "Listen, I gotta get up and go to mass in the morning, for Christ's sake. You guys start hollering and fighting in the middle of the goddamn..." "What the hell was the fight about, anyhow?"
"It's a long story. I don't want to bore you, Ackley. I'm thinking of your welfare," I told him. I never discussed my personal life with him. In the first place, he was even more stupid than Stradlater. Stradlater was a goddamn genius next to Ackley. "Hey," I said, "is it okay if I sleep in Eli's bed tonight? He won't be back till tomorrow night, will he?" I knew damn well he wouldn't. Eli went home damn near every weekend.
I don't know when the hell he's coming back, Ackley said.
Boy, did that annoy me. What the hell do you mean you don't know when he's coming back? He never comes back till Sunday night, does he? No, but for Christ's sake, I can't just tell somebody they can sleep in his goddamn bed if they want to. That killed me. I reached up from where I was sitting on the floor and patted him on the goddamn shoulder. You're a prince, Ackley, kid, I said. You know that? No, I mean it. I can't just tell somebody they can sleep in... You're a real prince. You're a gentleman and a scholar, kid, I said. He really was, too. Do you happen to have any cigarettes by any chance? Say no, or I'll drop dead. No, I don't, as a matter of fact. Listen, what the hell was the fight about? I didn't answer him. All I did was, I got up and went over and looked out the window. I felt so lonesome all of a sudden. I almost wished I was dead. What the hell was the fight about, anyhow? Ackley said for about the 50th time. He certainly was a bore about that. About you, I said. About me, for Christ's sake? Yeah, I was defending your goddamn honor. Stradlater said you had a lousy personality. I couldn't let him get away with that stuff. That got him excited. He did? No kidding. He did? I told him I was only kidding, and then I went over and laid down on Eli's bed. Boy, did I feel rotten. I felt so damn lonesome. This room stinks, I said. I can smell your socks from way over here. Don't you ever send them to the laundry? If you don't like it, you know what you can do, Ackley said. What a witty guy. How about turning off the goddamn light? I didn't turn it off right away, though. I just kept laying there on Eli's bed, thinking about Jane and all. It just drove me stark staring mad when I thought about her and Stradlater parked somewhere in that fat-assed Ed Bankey's car. Every time I thought about it, I felt like jumping out the window. The thing is, you didn't know Stradlater. I knew him. Most guys at Pensy just talked about having sexual intercourse with girls all the time, like Ackley, for instance, but old Stradlater really did it. I was personally acquainted with at least two girls he gave the time to. That's the truth. Tell me the story of your fascinating life, Ackley kid, I said. How about turning off the goddamn light? I gotta get up for Mass in the morning. I got up and turned it off, if it made him happy. Then I laid down on Eli's bed again. What are you gonna do? Sleep in Eli's bed? Ackley said. He was the perfect host, boy. I may not. Don't worry about it. I'm not worried about it, only I'd hate like hell if Eli came in all of a sudden and found some guy. Relax, I'm not going to sleep here. I wouldn't abuse your goddamn hospitality. A couple of minutes later, he was snoring like mad. I kept laying there in the dark anyway, though, trying not to think about old Jane and Stradlater in that goddamn Ed Bankey's car. But it was almost impossible. The trouble was, I knew that guy Stradlater's technique. That made it even worse. We once double-dated in Ed Bankey's car, and Stradlater was in the back with his date, and I was in the front with mine. What a technique that guy had. What he'd do was, he'd start snowing his date in this very quiet, sincere voice, like as if he wasn't only a very handsome guy, but a nice, sincere guy, too. I damn near puked listening to him. His date kept saying, "No, please, please don't, please," but old Stradlater kept snowing her in this Abraham Lincoln sincere voice, and finally there'd be this terrific silence in the back of the car. It was really embarrassing. I don't think he gave that girl the time that night, but damn near, damn near. While I was laying there, trying not to think, I heard old Stradlater come back from the can and go in our room. You could hear him putting away his crummy toilet articles and all and opening the window. He was a fresh air fiend. Then, a little while later, he turned off the light. He didn't even look around to see where I was at. It was even depressing out in the street. You couldn't even hear any cars anymore. I got feeling so lonesome and rotten, I even felt like waking Ackley up. "Hey, Ackley," I said in a sort of a whisper so Stradlater couldn't hear me through the shower curtain. Ackley didn't hear me, though. "Hey, Ackley!" He still didn't hear me. He slept like a rock. "Hey, Ackley!" He heard that all right. "What the hell's the matter with you?" he said. "I was asleep, for Christ's sake." "Listen, what's the routine on joining a monastery?" I asked him. I was sort of toying with the idea of joining one. "Do you have to be a Catholic and all?"
"Certainly you have to be a Catholic. You bastard, did you wake me just to ask me a dumb question?"
"Go back to sleep. I'm not going to join one anyway. The kind of luck I have, I'd probably join one with all the wrong kind of monks in it. All stupid bastards. They're just bastards." When I said that, old Ackley sat way the hell up in bed.
"Listen," he said, "I don't care what you say about me or anything, but if you start making cracks about my goddamn religion, for Christ's sake..."
"Relax," I said. "Nobody's making any cracks about your goddamn religion." I got up off Eli's bed and started towards the door. I didn't want to hang around in that stupid atmosphere anymore. I stopped on the way, though, and picked up Ackley's hand and gave him a big phony handshake. He pulled it away from me.
"What's the idea?" he said.
"No idea. I just want to thank you for being such a goddamn prince, that's all," I said. I said it in this very sincere voice. "You're aces, Ackley kid," I said. "You know that?"
"Wise guy. Someday somebody's gonna bash your..."
I didn't even bother to listen to him. I shut the damn door and went out in the corridor. Everybody was asleep or out or home for the weekend, and it was very, very quiet and depressing in the corridor. There was this empty box of Kano's toothpaste outside Leahy and Hoffman's door, and while I walked down toward the stairs, I kept giving it a boot with this sheep-lined slipper I had on. What I thought I'd do, I thought I might go down and see what old Mal Brossard was doing. But all of a sudden, I changed my mind. All of a sudden, I decided what I'd really do. I'd get the hell out of Pensy. Right that same night and all. I mean, not wait till Wednesday or anything. I just didn't want to hang around anymore. It made me too sad and lonesome. So, what I decided to do, I decided I'd take a room in a hotel in New York, some very inexpensive hotel and all, and just take it easy till Wednesday. Then on Wednesday, I'd go home all rested up and feeling swell. I figured my parents probably wouldn't get old Thurmer's letter saying I'd been given the axe till maybe Tuesday or Wednesday. I didn't want to go home or anything till they got it, and thoroughly digested it and all. I didn't want to be around when they first got it. My mother gets very hysterical. She's not too bad after she gets something thoroughly digested, though. Besides, I sort of needed a little vacation. My nerves were shot, they really were. Anyway, that's what I decided I'd do. So I went back to the room and turned on the light to start packing and all. I already had quite a few things packed. Old Stradlater didn't even wake up. I lit a cigarette and got all dressed, and then I packed these two Gladstones I have. It only took me about 2 minutes. I'm a very rapid packer. One thing about packing depressed me a little. I had to pack these brand new ice skates my mother had practically just sent me a couple of days before. That depressed me. I could see my mother going in Spaulding's and asking the salesman a million dopey questions, and here I was getting the axe again. It made me feel pretty sad. She bought me the wrong kind of skates. I wanted racing skates, and she bought hockey, but it made me sad anyway. Almost every time somebody gives me a present, it ends up making me sad. After I got all packed, I sort of counted my dough. I don't remember exactly how much I had, but I was pretty loaded. My grandmother just sent me a wad about a week before. I have this grandmother that's quite lavish with her dough. She doesn't have all her marbles anymore. She's old as hell. And she keeps sending me money for my birthday about 4 times a year. Anyway, even though I was pretty loaded, I figured I could always use a few extra bucks. You never know. So what I did was, I went down the hall and woke up Frederick Woodruff, this guy I'd lent my typewriter to. I asked him how much he'd give me for it. He was a pretty wealthy guy. He said he didn't know. He said he didn't much want to buy it. Finally, he bought it, though. It cost about $90, and all he bought it for was $20. He was sore, because I'd woke him up. When I was all set to go, when I had my bags and all, I stood for a while next to the stairs and took a last look down the goddamn corridor. I was sort of crying. I don't know why. I put my red hunting hat on and turned the peak around to the back the way I liked it, and then I yelled at the top of my goddamn voice, "Sleep tight, you morons!" I'll bet I woke up every bastard on the whole floor. Then I got the hell out. Some stupid guy had thrown peanut shells all over the stairs, and I damn near broke my crazy neck.
Anon Radio.
Icecasting on AnonRadio.net.
Anon Radio.
Icecasting on AnonRadio.net.